Great. Okay. Well, I think we're all here, so that's wonderful. So I would like to start this meeting, well, by welcoming everyone, and then by acknowledging with gratitude that we are holding this meeting on the traditional lands of the Coast Salish people, and particularly the Qualicum First Nation. So the first thing on our agenda is to adopt the agenda. Does anybody have anything they need added or would like to go ahead and adopt it? Doug, you'll move adoption?
Yes.
Great. And a seconder?
So move.
Great. Okay. And everyone's in favor of the agenda? Say aye. Perfect. David, you'll have to use your vocal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, approval of the minutes. I think everyone was, the minutes were circulated to everyone. Do we have a mover? There's no errors or omissions. Greg and Ben, is there a seconder? All those in favor? Say aye. Perfect. Thank you. So those are approved. So we have business arising from the minutes. And under that, there's a draft recommendations to council on which areas should be prioritized and how best to advance the town's goals and objectives in alignment with our sustainability plan. Based on last meeting's discussion on the community climate change adaptation plan, and that was objective two, to continue long-term planning for sea level rise in alignment with the waterfront master plan. And we decided rather than try to hash out a bunch of recommendations at the end of our meeting that we would kind of go away and think about it and come back with something. And Doug was so good as to circulate his thoughts about that. And I wondered if maybe we might use those as a starting point for some of the recommendations. He had recommendations listed 1 through 8. Did everyone receive a copy of Doug's supplementary notes?
Yeah.
Okay. And we may not finalize this today, but if we could, I don't know if anybody has any thoughts or wanted to make some changes, but maybe we could use these as a placeholder for moving ahead or for what we would submit to council at some point. I think there was general agreement that we would work on recommendations on each item and then put something together at the end of this process. Was that what other people recalls as well?
Excuse me, starting to interrupt, Councillor Stussy. Bernie, if you could let Bob into the meeting, he's extremely excited about joining us.
I'm just so sorry.
Great. So I thought, Doug, I liked your timelines on the recommendations. I thought they were reasonable. Of course, we'd always like to see things happening, you know, right away. I think realistically, 2023 is probably more in line with what's achievable. So recommendation one was as a priority, and by December 2023, the town of Qualicum Beach should initiate a program of public awareness about the long-term prognosis and implications of sea level rise for Qualicum Beach. And that was the focus of our discussion, of course, last time. Any comments or changes? No.
Excuse me, Anne, do you want to go through all of these or?
Well, I don't know. How would we like to use our time? I'm a little bit worried that if we do go through all of them, that we're not going to have enough time to kind of get into today's conversation.
Yeah, exactly. My idea with these was that because we had a conversation and yet I was worried that some of the things that I had written down as notes might fade from my memory before too long. So I put them in writing and I thought, well, I may as well share with everybody else I didn't necessarily intend that we would go around the whole discussion again,
okay.
but I hope that they would, you know, be useful because we said we're going to do a sort of collected set of recommendations later. I thought, okay, we'll have these on file. We can come back to them at that point. So I'm happy just to leave them if everybody is okay with that. I'm also happy to discuss them now if people see stuff that they think, oh, gee, that's really not what I thought we talked about or doesn't agree with it.
Well, I think as we go, too, there might be some overlap or something else takes a priority or, you know, so I think as a placeholder, they're very good.
Yeah, that was my idea. Thank you.
Okay. Luke, you wanted to make a comment?
Yes, I was going to suggest that we could just make a motion that Doug's notes be used as a placeholder and that they be used as the basis of future recommendations with regard to the Waterfront Master Plan.
Perfect.
So just to make sure that it's recorded in the minutes. So if you made a motion to that effect, then it would, Doug, you would go down in history.
This is exciting.
So Doug, would you want to make that motion?
Well, it's my notes. Maybe somebody else should.
Okay.
Okay, I can make the motion.
Okay. And do we have a seconder?
I'll second it in.
Okay, great. Okay, and all those in favor? Great. Unanimous. Okay, so then moving on to number 4, and that is today's discussion, which is objective 3. And that is promote and expand the use of low-impact development and nature-based solutions for building. And I did go through and just sort of look at what the climate change adaptation plan, what the recommendations were around this or the actions. And so action 3.1 is to increase permeable surfaces on both private and public property to manage impacts from extreme rainfall events. So that was one of the first actions that was identified out of the climate change adaptation plan. And that was identified as the Town of Qualicum Beach responsibility and also perhaps the province of BC. 3.2 was to investigate feasibility of natural asset management development. And maybe we can have a brief conversation about that afterwards. I'm sure staff could add some additional comments on that action. 3.3 is to explore best practices from other communities and organizations and support businesses and organizations practicing low-impact development. So I thought maybe, I don't know, we could open it up, and if anyone has any comments about those specific actions or anything outside of that, I did forward the Green Laneway project report to people if you had an opportunity. I don't know, that was kind of last minute, to take a look at that, but I thought maybe we could open that up. Or Luke, do you want to, anything you want to say to sort of kick off the conversation?
Let's see, I could give a bit of context on those three actions, just to stimulate some discussion.
Okay.
So on the first one, the increased permeable surfaces, I would say that this does align with the town's general objective in the OCP to request stormwater management reports as a part of development applications. So the town is and has been for a while headed in this direction, but certainly there's more that can be done. And I think there's some interesting precedents from other communities when it comes to permeable surfaces and in terms of maybe even regulating them and being a bit more hands-on with regard to the storm network, and especially as it relates to natural infrastructure. So that's the only kind of introductory comments I'd have on that one. The second one, and Bob, sorry, anytime you want to jump in, just go ahead and jump in. The second one, which is natural asset management, that's something that was highlighted in a recent meeting, and so John Marsh, who's the town's director of finance, did indicate that that's going to be included at some point into the town's asset management plan. So I just noticed Bob's hand, so he probably wants to comment on the first one, and then I'll speak a little bit about the third one. Bob, you want to jump in?
Yeah, so my comments about the increased permeable surfaces on both private and public property, I think it's a little more complicated than that. And, you know, if we're looking for, you know, increased density in the walkable neighborhood and everything like that, that just the simple kind of increased permeable surfaces is it's going to be difficult because you're going to be covering some of the properties just with housing. However, hard surfaces still give you the opportunity to create detention, retention, and exfiltration capabilities underneath them. Like there's lots of parking lots and hard surface areas that contain sort of cell-like structures or suitable materials underneath where you direct rainwater to, and you know it's released through a very controlled outlet, or it's allowed to exfiltrate into the soils if they're suitable. So there's other ways of skinning the cat here. We certainly like get the idea, and the green lane is a part of that as well. Like, let's find a different way to try and manage our stormwater rather than put in a great new pipe and head it for the ocean. So there's nothing incompatible with the direction of the town. I think the statement is just an oversimplification, and you know that could potentially be modified. But I don't see it as standing in the way of what we're trying to do. Those were my only comments.
That's a good comment, Bob. And if I were to add or summarize that, I'd just say that it seems like what you're describing is more of a performance goal, and as opposed to specifying how we get there. In other words, if our goal is to get water into the ground, increasing permeable surfaces is one way to do that. But there's other options in the Green Language Report, or like you said, detention under other hard surfaces. So I'm just throwing that out there. Am I capturing your comments correctly, Bob?
Yes, that's fine. As people want to try and develop a different kind of housing, there will still be a requirement to have things like driveways and parking areas, and people, the client or the buyer will want them or prefer them or want to modify them to that state. So you find another way to live with what they want to deliver what you're trying to achieve.
All right, good. Thanks, Bob. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit about the last one. So exploring best practices from other communities and organizations and support businesses and organizations practicing low-impact development. I don't know whether committee members had a chance to look around online and read some of the resources that are out there, but there's a huge body of literature and best practices and all sorts of stuff as it relates to LID, or low-impact development, mostly focused on the world of stormwater management. But it does kind of speak directly to the idea of using or mimicking natural systems in the development of municipal infrastructure. And like I said, mostly focused on storm, but it does overflow into other areas that the town provides service. So that was just intended to stimulate some discussion. So I'll turn it back to you, Councillor Skipsey, and others can jump in and offer some comments. Thanks.
And I'll just add that the Green Laneway project, I got clarification from Luke earlier about this. So the consultant produced the report, but the next step would be to actually come up with a policy. And so council has directed staff to come up with a policy, so that is sort of headed in the right direction already. Anyways, looking at how best to utilize those laneways. And for the report, it dealt with two neighborhoods in Qualicum Beach, but hopefully the findings could be used elsewhere. I mean, we don't have the luxury of all those laneways in some neighborhoods, but certainly is an interesting idea. And I think, yeah, there's some good options there. I like the idea that, we try to keep much of the vegetation in place because it is performing in as far as holding water and water retention. I had a few comments. One of the things that Qualicum Beach used to do a lot of was swales, and there's still swales around in a lot of places, but we've moved away from those somewhat. It's my observation in more recent development. And I just wonder, now that we have Mr. Weir here, whether you might provide information as to why we've moved away from swales, because they seem to be an inexpensive, effective way of dealing with some of the rainwater or stormwater issues.
I might argue that we've incorporated a lot of swales in some of our recent projects. I'd point to Memorial Avenue, Lower Memorial going through the golf course, directs a lot of the, sheets a lot of the road runoff onto a swale for cleansing and infiltration detention. There's swales that actually come down the steep parts of Memorial, but they're armored with rocks so as not to displace the soils. I mean, we incorporate them where we can. the pathways we built, were exclusively swales except where we had to pipe in direct water to other locations. So the concept's not lost on us, and it certainly would be part of the green laneways exercise, probably in an even more modified fashion, because for them to really work, you need to pay attention to, having suitable and graded material below them to take and filter and infiltrate the water. Just a swale with that's just like seeded will eventually fill up with silt in the bottom and not really be very effective at all at trying to infiltrate water. I don't think we've abandoned them at all. I think that maybe in the past we chose, or the town chose less expensive options of open ditching. I would question whether that was terribly effective or not.
Mm-hmm. I guess my comments came from just my observations in my own neighborhood, where at one time everybody kind of had a dip or a little, I call it a swale, in front of their homes, and now some of that's being replaced, like covered over and piped. So I didn't know whether that was like a one-off or whether that's intended to carry on down the roadway.
Well, in certain cases, there were lots of open ditches beside the roadways in Qualicum Beach in the past. That's the way it was kind of developed. However, in areas where, we've either had sort of like bank failures or, say the Crescent is an example where, water went over bank and did cause a failure. They tried to infill those ditches and pipe the water away so it wouldn't become problematic. And lots of times swales don't have a lot of capacity. So, I think we have to be careful where we try and put them and what we're trying to achieve. Certainly, I think there's more work to be done on the Crescent. And what we've done in Qualicum Woods, where we know we have some suitable soils for infiltration, if people want to try and infill their ditch for whatever aesthetic effect they want on the front, we still make them put in structures that take the initial flush of water and try and infiltrate it on site before any water is allowed to go through their pipe. So there's lots of ways to do it. We do try and respect people's, people's requests for how they want their front yard done as well. We don't want to lose the effectiveness of opportunities to infiltrate.
Does anybody else have any comments or questions on this? Have people made notes or anything related to low impact development generally? Doug?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Anne, for sending around that report on the green laneways. That was interesting. And I was really struck by the synergy between what's recommended in there and what we talked about in the urban forest management, our last workshop about the urban forest management plan, relating to ideas of preserving enough soil space for trees, of course, is more or less the same thing as preserving permeable surfaces. So they do more than one thing at once. They provide opportunities for vegetation as well as providing an avenue for water handling and infiltration. I was really struck in the Green Laneways report by figure 15 on page 24 shows the two sketches of what to avoid and what to do. And, of course, this report was drafted in the context of my neighborhood right here. And there's some examples of building going on in the neighborhood right now. And when I look at the avoid and what to do and what to avoid, I'm seeing more of what to avoid than of the what to do in what's happening around here right now. And so I'm just wondering, what's the status of this green laneways? Is this something that's just a recommendation now, or is this is there a policy in place that it should be followed, or is that going to come later?
Yeah, that was my question to Luke earlier, and just for clarification, if it were ever adopted by council, or you know, what happened to the report? And the response, and Luke, you can correct me if I misunderstood or anything, but that there has been a motion by council to revisit laneways and to come up with a policy on how we handle laneways. And I think I'm hoping that part of that review will look at what was produced in the Green Laneways project report. Am I making a correct assumption, Luke, or am I?
Yeah, you nailed it. The report was done to explore a concept in 2013, but the next step in terms of actually putting together a policy or some regulation wasn't done. So, you know, we frequently refer to the Green Laneways report, but when it comes to people actually, you know, developing rear laneways or opening up access or landscaping, it's not yet used as a, you know, guiding document. So that is the next step as a policy.
And that was fairly recently that was approved by council? Like, where are we in that process?
Yeah, I actually had to check with Heather because I think it may have just been the last meeting, because it came as a block of recommendations from a committee of the whole meeting, I think. So for everyone's benefit, it's very fresh. You know, this motion of council is like less than a month old. So bear with us. We haven't completed the task yet.
I guess one of my observations by looking at the sustainability plan and, you know, the climate change adaptation plan and the green laneways and whatnot, there's a lot of information there. There's a lot of good ideas and whatnot, but the objective here is to promote and expand the use. And so how do we actually bring it so that it's bringing it forward, so it's being used by our contractors or our community, that it's used as a resource and that people are aware of it? And I think that, you know, perhaps that public consultation or public information piece is important and maybe missing at this point.
One observation I'd make is that when someone applies for a development permit or a zoning amendment, I think the town's pretty good at catching some of these low-impact development principles, and they often get incorporated. But when it's just a single-family house being developed or something that doesn't require the same level of town review, I think that that's where they're more often slipping through the cracks. So that's where a policy or something as a next step would make sense, because it could be applied in all circumstances, not just for zoning amendments and development permits.
David, do you have some comments?
Sorry about that. Yeah, I'm just kind of wondering if I'm missing something here, but it seems on a number of cases it's a very long gap between a report and some sort of movement on policy. And I'm just a little mystified as to why that is. I mean, why complete a report and accept a report and then take 9 or 10 years before that shows up in policy? Because I think it's sort of perhaps germane to what we're talking about right now. There's an added sense of urgency, but do we have the kind of, I should say, mechanism in place to actually really kickstart some of these policies?
Yeah. No, I think that's a good question. And having been elected to council in 2014, I don't think I was even aware of the Green Laneway report.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe sometimes it could be partly that turnover of things. I don't know. Does any staff have any comment about what kind of has been happening with this?
Sure. I mean, that's a good question. Very good question. Because when you look at the dates, you start to wonder, why has it been 9 years? When we applied for and received this grant, it was 2012, and the project was finished in 2013. And then, as you noted, Councillor Skipsey, there was a change in council the following year, and it was, you know, it somehow was replaced by other priorities in terms of the actions that staff were requested of. So, yeah, I think that that's exactly it. I think that as one council is replaced by the next, sometimes there's not a continuity of priorities. So that's where I'd always say it is important to make sure that things get reflected in motions and minutes, because then they do live on beyond the actual meeting. So the best way to get action is to make sure that there's specific recommendations coming out of the meetings, and then for council that there be specific, you know, motions coming out of their meetings, because that's how things get actioned at the municipal scale. So just a general comment, and clearly that's not what happened in the past.
Doug, did you?
Yes, thank you for that explanation. It strikes me that if that's the case, how things go forward. It might be great if we could recommend to council that they consider the urban forest management strategy and the green laneways strategy, not exactly as one and the same thing, but linked, and the option of moving forward together, because they're quite synergistic and support each other. I don't know if that would help to, because I know there's been a certain amount of political talk in the community generally about the urban forest management strategy, but we haven't heard anything really about the green laneways. So it'd be a shame if it got lost, fell to the bottom of the agenda again, whereas it's highly compatible with some of the recommendations for urban forests. So if the two went forward more or less together, that might be effective. Somebody'd have to look at them in more detail to make sure that's the case, but just a thought.
My only fear is that we hold up the urban forest management.
Fair enough.
And we don't want to do that, right? I was going to ask for an update from staff at the end of this meeting as to where that's at, because that's actually the next objective on the list. So, Greg, do you have any comments, insights, questions?
I don't have a lot. I'll just a couple of brief things. Yeah, first of all, thank you for forwarding that Green Laneways report. And the first thing I noticed in there, I was actually saying this, Doug, that there was some overlap and synergy, if you will, between that and the urban forest plan. I would also note that what I saw as the synergy there was the recommendation, or our recommendation, I guess, in the urban forest plan to include some sort of cover requirements or percentage area suitable for tree growth or whatever, with new developments. And that's sort of what I thought was similar to what they were talking about in the green laneways. So it would be nice if somehow that aspect of those two plans got or reports got carried forward. I do note that all the way through the urban forest plan development process, that the idea of requiring, percent areas to be reserved for, suitable for trees was something that I think we sort of recommended at the end. It was not originally the focus seemed to be more on regulating individual landowners from cutting into the trees. But anyway, yeah, without going on too long, I say I do recognize the commonalities between those things, and it'd be nice if at least what we saw as the critical elements could be pushed forward in some way.
Mm-hmm. I guess the one thing about green laneways is that it really focuses in on two neighborhoods, and I don't know how it would apply out to the rest of the community. I guess that I would need maybe take another look at that.
Yeah.
Bob, you have something for us?
I sort of got a bucket full of like comments and ideas here. I'll try and get them out in some organized fashion.
Okay.
The challenge with the green laneways or trying to redevelop the laneways has always been, you know, it depends on what subject property comes forward and where it is and whether we have anything adjacent or off-site to manage what it's doing. So, you know, we could have them build something in the laneway adjacent to them, but it still may be hundreds of meters away from someplace we can take their major storm flows or something like that. But also, like again, looking at the synergies between the urban forest management strategy, cover, tree planting, you know, look at the green laneways and like the roadsides, the rights of way, as opportunities to maybe to do some of this planting and have coverage. And the green laneway could be even treated like a like an adjacent works and services at the time of development. Like, you know, thou shalt produce so much of like the green laneways, but maybe we do it. Maybe they contribute to a fund and we decide where we start, or, you know, we get it more organized, because it's been difficult to implement because the whole conception was that we don't have any kind of storm sewer in the uptown area where we're trying to get density and development, and we didn't want to rip up all the roads and put in a conventional old pipe structure to do it. So we were looking for like a, you know, a different kind of a strategy. So that's kind of was the big idea behind it. You know, implementing it was a totally different thing, and maybe we got to look at more innovative ways to try and get it implemented. Now, as far as like how long it's taken and why hasn't staff done all this work or something's going on, I would point out that like we are really focused on council and what they identify as their strategic plan, and that really guides our efforts. And, you know, in defense of saying like, you know, we haven't got there by now, I would also say, well, you know, I would like to publish at exactly the same time a complete listing of all the actions required of staff by motions directed by council. So, you know, there's only so many people, and there's a lot of ideas come out of every meeting. So, you know, they just kind of make a little defensive statement there about, you know, what gets done when and how fast. Anyway, I'm probably going to put my foot in my mouth if I keep going, so I'm going to mute.
Luke, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I was going to jump in before Bob put his foot in his mouth too. So, just joking. I mean, you're absolutely right. I wanted to slightly refocus the discussion here, because I'm hearing a lot about the tree, you know, the urban forest management plan, and I'm hearing a lot about the Green Laneways report. And I think there's an opportunity for this committee to describe a bit of a vision around that, to, you know, a direction that we could be working, you know, as opposed to working out the mechanics of it right now. Because I think you all intuitively have a bit of that vision in your mind. Like, what would a back laneway would look like? Like, what would it have plants in it? Okay, so what kinds of plants? Would it be providing stormwater infiltration, vehicular access? Like, what would that laneway look like? And I think if you spent a minute and tried to articulate that might help us move forward as we try to weave these two plans together.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can answer that off the top of my head. I don't know if anybody else sort of has more of a vision of that. Does anyone want to jump in there? I guess the other thing is that there's all kinds of different other things that were on the list, right? Like more pervious surfaces, there's rainwater catchment, there's cisterns, there's, like, how do we reuse some of that water? There's green roofs, and there was a project uptown at one time that was going to put a green roof on it, and then for some reason it didn't happen. And so, like, I guess my question is, how do we make some of these, or help advance some of these things in the community? David, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, I guess just hearkening back to what, to the comment that Lucas just made, I, for one, I mean, I've lived here for a number of years now, and I'm not really aware of where all the green laneways are. Some of them are fairly, are reasonably obvious, but it would be useful, I'm almost tempted to say it would be useful for us to go out and sort of, as a committee, take a look at some of the different iterations of green laneways in the community, particularly, I guess, in those two subject areas that were included in the report, because it's rather hard. I do know, for instance, that some green laneways are just big patches of blackberries. So, I mean, there's all, it seems to be all types of green laneways and sort of standards of the laneways as well. So, it might be difficult. It might be actually quite useful for us to go out and actually identify some of these.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Bob, do you have a comment?
Well, yeah, I think in answer to that, there hasn't really been a lot of green laneways executed in the spirit of the report. That's part of our problem. Like, and because we did, like I said before, like our opportunities come when developers come in and we can make them do something, as a requirement of their development, because we don't really have any kind of budget or line item to go out and start building green laneways. Just another comment, though, about like impervious surface and impervious surface cover. If a development, and why are there no sort of like green roofs? Green roofs are brilliant. I think they could be beautiful recreation areas for outdoor areas for like buildings that are dense and are covering a lot of the property, and they do give you an opportunity to put some suitable plantings in pots on that structure and give yourself some canopy and cover and shade that would otherwise just be like geroids, like emitting a lot of heat. I know that insurers don't love green roofs and other lots of people are nervous about them, but they're a tremendous solution. And I think that if a person wants to develop to a certain density on their property and cover it with impervious surface, and then you can say, well, you have to reproduce the value of trees and cover and canopy with some other feature, like a green roof, and you can do your stormwater detention with it, and things like that. So it's just another concept we could, or a carrot or a hammer, however you want to look at it, with developers to try and get a little more shade and cover in the downtown that we're trying to densify and get people to live in.
Hmm. Well, my thing is, there was a proposal coming forward. It did have a green roof, and then somehow it didn't, right? In the end, I don't know. So, like, how does that process, why would they back away from that? Like, is there... I think perhaps some of it came from the APC had comments or concerns about the manufacturing or the structural things of green roofs, or I just don't know. It would have been it would have been great to have seen, and that particular project has a lot of impervious surfaces, and so I just don't know how we didn't end up there. Like, maybe Luke, you probably know the project I'm talking about.
Which I'm trying to figure out which project it is. Can you clarify?
It's on First Avenue. It's the one that's almost just completed now. The one that Lois and Jim Grant had brought forward, and there was to be a green roof in the original proposals.
Oh, okay. So that wasn't advanced by the applicant. I think that they had that as an initial concept and then realized what's actually involved in putting in a green roof. So it was a concept, but after some due diligence, the owner withdrew that as a proposal. So that wasn't the town's direction.
Okay. So it was something that the developer or the owner had thought of, but it wasn't something that that came from the town necessarily.
That's right. I think it actually, I'll give you the complete story some other time, but I'll just summarize it and say it wasn't the town, and certainly we've been supportive of green roofs for quite a while, but they are expensive. So it can be intimidating for especially a small project to take on.
I will note that the proposal for the Naked Naturals, the new store, has a green roof, or at least part of it, the part that's not covered in solar panels. So, maybe sometimes seeing what is possible will create some more interest in the community. Good hope. Ben, do you have any thoughts or comments?
Yeah, I can give a couple makes sense here. Look at the screen.
I know it's hard to know where to look.
Forgive me, I don't know much about LID or NBS, but I like that idea of you were mentioning water catchment. I know this is probably fits more in with number 6, increased water conservation practices. But it's like as we get into more of these heat storms, more of these droughts in the summer, and we still are allowing our citizens to be watering their gardens and grass all summer, I think we're going to have to move to the direction of water catchments, be it cisterns and new builds, or at least rain barrels, to be able to water your plants throughout the summer. And there's not that need from the public to do that, because we can easily just turn on our taps.
Mm-hmm.
But if there was some sort of incentive for the public to move towards that direction, then I think this could lead itself well towards that educational piece we were talking about last time. But just getting people to realize that water is coming from somewhere, and if we can catch some of that water and use it how we're going to use it anyway. Bit off topic, but just a thought I had.
Yeah. Well, I think when Luke and I originally talked about going through these different objectives, we did have the idea of having somebody from the RDN come in and talk to us about watershed protection, maybe Julie Pisani or somebody there that's had a lot of experience, and just talk to us about what they're doing and what some of those options are, and looking at that as the best practices. Bob, you wanted to?
Julie Pisani would be a great person to come and do it. She's been part of that program. She's done a great job of that program. The only problem is she just left on a maternity leave, so she's going to be tied up for a while, and I haven't met her replacement, so we'll just wait and see who we've got and what's going on there, but if we can wait for Julie, she's perfect. And certainly a lot of the programs that they try and get the public involved in the educational projects, they're available to Qualcomm Beach residents, and we have some uptake, but not a ton, not as many as other areas. But certainly when we could maybe do a better job of publicizing them and the town tidings on our website, and get it out. I know that it goes up on our website, but not everybody spends their days searching through our website for new information. But it's a good program.
I wonder if they would have a presence at some of our upcoming special events, maybe like Beach Day or something.
They have in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not exactly sure what their plans are for public participation, but they've been very good and usually give out little gimmicks or things or stuff like they had little rain gauges to put out and try and and do a little more fine-tuning with your irrigation so you aren't wasting water, you're putting on the appropriate amount. They'll come and do an irrigation audit on your system and tell you how to more efficiently adjust it and stuff. So, I mean, we got to, like, you know, I sort of get what Ben's saying, like, we got to change the future, but there's a lot of people in Qualicum Beach want what they want, and, you know, they spent their life trying to get here to get it, and, you know, so they're not necessarily a super captive audience to being told that they got to have a brown lawn or something like that. So just a tough crowd.
I will note there's one of our neighbors has recently just done a lot of work removing their paved driveway and putting in a more of a tile that has, so it's now pervious. And they've added solar panels to the roofs and whatnot. So maybe even highlighting some of those projects and letting people know more about why they've done that and whatnot. An education piece would be helpful in giving other people ideas about what's possible. Doug, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, just following up on that. I recently had occasion, we own a property at the corner of Pine Street and Harlech, and there's a big strip of property that belongs to the town between the house and the street, a big wide boulevard there, about 1,500 square feet. And we recently, when the house was built around 1990 or so, they put down various forms of garbage plastic and covered it with gravel, all kinds of stuff, mill salt and all kinds of other stuff. We just recently took that away, and we took 600 kilograms of plastic to the dump that was underneath the gravel. And then we're right in, if you go by there right now, you'll see that I'm in the process of raking up the rocks. I can only work for about an hour a day before my vat gives out. And we're going to seed that with grass. But the interesting thing was when I got the guy from Pro West to come out and talk about hydro seeding, he said, you should put in this rye grass. And I said, I want something that can let it go golden in the summer. You know, I don't have to water it in the summer. He said, oh, no, that's not a good idea. You want this rye grass, and then you'll water it, and it'll look nice. So I just thought it was interesting that it's hard to get information. Subsequently, I talked to Lynette at the town, and she said, I'll send you some information about the grass seeds we're using. But it would be great if there was a little bit more information available about sort of xeriscaping and water use friendly options for putting in there. So I'm going to have to do a bit more research about what species to use and how to put it in there and get it started. It's not something I can get off the shelf about the best way to do that. So that's one thing that could be useful, having a bit of information about water conserving vegetation in general. And then the other thing was, it really made me think about this whole issue about putting down weed barriers under gravel as a surface. I guess it's okay. It is sort of pervious, but now that we're learning so much more about the fact that plastic in the environment never goes away, it's just, you know, they found microplastic particles in human blood now when they take blood samples from people. So we really have to get away with putting more plastic into our environment. So I was happy to have a chance to pick up all that plastic and get rid of it. But we really should be rethinking the whole use of geotextiles in the landscaping industry too, because that's plastic, huge volumes of plastic. In the forest industry, we use vast amounts of it to stabilize logging roads. And in the fullness of time, water, that's going to end up in the streams doing more, maybe more harm than the sediments would have done that we were trying to keep out of the streams. So one of those sad examples that we learn as we go along that the things we thought were great are maybe not the best way to do things after all. That doesn't really lead anywhere, but I just wanted to make that comment about using of plastics in landscaping, that maybe get that on the radar, that sooner or later we'll have a policy to encourage people not to do that.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone had a chance to look at Victoria's, what was it called, the Rainwater Reward Program. And essentially they offer like a discount for people who deal with or have pervious surfaces, increased pervious surfaces, less stormwater runoff on off of their properties. And I think for single family, it's only a 10% discount on their stormwater utility, but it may be incentive enough for some people. And for multifamily and whatnot, it can be up to 40% discount on their utility bills. So I like that idea of having the carrot rather than the stick as far as getting people to do it. Luke.
Yes, just wanted to make sure everybody knows that we don't have a cost associated with the stormwater utility. So the first thing that Victoria did before they got off of the discount was to charge the utility fee. So just want to make sure that everyone's clear that would be the first step. I think it's a very intriguing idea and, you know, lots of opportunities if we were to do it at the local area, but we do need to start charging it first.
Right. And maybe there would be other things that we could offer. Maybe it's not stormwater or I don't know. But, I mean, that's the idea, essentially, is to reduce that runoff, to have zero runoff off your property, right? Being able to deal with it on site. Bob?
Yeah, so I participated in one of the province's first stormwater management guidebooks. And, you know, we talked about stormwater utilities. They are difficult to put in place, especially for small utilities, you know, just working in Victoria. But we looked at different incentives, and one was like a, you know, at the time of building your development, this could even go down to single family development, is the developer has to put up a bond, let's call it a landscaping bond for argument. And typically what we do in single family residential, you go into a site, you strip it down to its mineral soils, you know, you put your foundation in and then you roll out some, you know, carpet-like grass, turf, but, you know, there's no soil on the site. And, you know, if they had incentives in this program where, like, say, if you put a foot of good, you know, topsoil material, improved material on your entire site before you roll out your turf or something like that, you would get so much of your landscape deposit back. And every time you made some kind of improvement or you did some on-site stormwater detention controlled release or, you know, incorporated some other management measures, you know, the bond got returned to you. And if you were just a developer just wants to grind them out and you didn't give a damn and you're just trying to get the house built and sold, well, then you forfeit this bond and the town takes it and could use it for something like green laneways development or some other opportunity. So there are other ways to do it without going to a stormwater utility, which I think would be difficult for us.
I just like the idea of using a carrot for people, right? And as you say, there may be other ways of other things that we incentivize. Luke, did you have another comment?
No, only that I need to lower my hands.
Oh.
Sorry, go.
You know, we haven't heard from you. You've been listening in on the conversation. Do you have any thoughts or comments for us?
I don't have any comments at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. One of the things, one of the actions was, you know, explore best practices from other communities and support businesses and organizations practicing this. So I don't know, maybe I think that's what we've been talking about a bit more about, you know, companies that are providing services, you know, how do we provide education to them so that when they go out to help a homeowner with their lawn, that they're making a different recommendation. Those kinds of things, like how do we educate the public too? I think that that's a really important piece. And, you know, showing examples of where it's worked and where, you know, a good, anyway, sorry, this time of the day is not my best time of the day as we were talking earlier, sorry. Does anybody else have any other comments on this before we move anywhere? I think perhaps the way we want to tackle this is the same way we did with the waterfront master plan discussion last time, is to go away and kind of think about where we would, what recommendations we would make to council on this, where we see would be a priority for the community, where we think that we could make a difference with some of the programs or education, some of the actions that are achievable, right? Doug?
Well, just a quick question. I guess it's for Luke. And it follows up on that idea of the landscape bond that Bob was talking about. And that's where I see a really strong connection between the urban forest management strategy and the green laneways and generally stormwater management in a more general sense, not just in the laneways, but in the whole property, that if there were a landscape bond, was kind of a standard thing whenever somebody took out a building permit, then you could have some performance standards that, like you say, could give some of the money back, and that could relate both to tree planting and to, it could relate both to urban forest and to stormwater management. Do we currently charge any kind of, or require people to post a landscape bond? And if so, where and how does that work?
So the town currently takes a landscape bond for zoning amendments and development permits, usually at the development permit stage. So it kind of reflects what I was talking about earlier, that we're really missing the boat when it comes to single family, right? The large multifamily developments, I think we cover those off. It's the other stuff that we're missing. So, I'm not sure if the committee is going to make any motions today, but just, I guess, consider that we should be addressing both the fronts of the properties and the rear. So green laneways mostly applies to the rear. But we also have lots of landscaping improvements in the front. So maybe what the committee might end up recommending is that, a bond be taken by the town at the time of construction, and that portions of it are refunded based on the amount of, impervious surfaces or something like that. What I don't know is actually the legal mechanism for doing that yet. So if that's what you want to work towards, great. We can throw it out there as an aspiration, and then staff, we can do our homework and figure out, some of the legal mechanisms, because it's a little bit different than a damage deposit. There's some other areas as well that we can find a way to do it.
Okay, thanks. Bob, did you have more?
Yeah, my hand was triggered by something that Luke said. I think if the committee wants to do something, it would be, make a motion that the staff be directed to try and find a legal mechanism where we can put it in place. Do we have somewhere we can put a bylaw to actually require and request this? Because there's good opportunities here with the, green laneways, with a landscape, with a rainwater management initiatives and urban forests. Like it's great opportunity, and there's lots of things that the person can do, to get all of his bond back by doing a bunch of the right things. And like it's the Skitsy carrot bylaw, that will guide single family development going forward.
Yeah. And there may be other communities out there that are doing something like this. I guess it would maybe take a bit of research. I know, for instance, Cumberland is very, proactive when it comes to things. They've made their whole, I understand they've made their whole community a development permit area. So everything has to come for a development permit. I don't know. That's pretty extreme, but at least they have a control over all of that development in their community. So, but as I say, there's very progressive communities, people doing all kinds of different things that maybe we can piggyback on or learn from. So are people okay if we think about this a little bit more and send any comments, share? We could amongst ourselves. I think we all have each other's email addresses now. So if there are more thoughts or questions or ideas, and then preparing recommendations that we would like to see go to council. So maybe that is the one that we look into, what kind of legal mechanisms we could use to support businesses and actually get things happening. I think it was promote and expand were the words. So, yeah. Okay. We'll leave it at that for now. And then the next thing is on the agenda, the status of recommendations to council, which didn't show up any at this point. Under new business, update from staff on projects underway. Luke, I'm guessing that's you.
Yeah, probably would be. I'm not actually sure what the updates would be in this regard, but I just want to remind everyone that we are doing that Green Shores educational seminar in May. So we'll be posting more details on that soon. But if as a follow-up to the last meeting, you're excited about the waterfront and want to learn more, that is being hosted with the Stewardship Center BC and the town in May.
Okay. Thank you. Bob, did you have an update? Maybe?
Yes, I'm just going to try and it was in response to one of Doug's comments about producing maps that showed the flood susceptibility of certain properties in town. I just wanted to let him know that we do have that capability, and we I'll send you this document. It's all the properties are susceptible to flooding. I can send that as a PDF. So we do have LIDAR, and we redo the LIDAR on a regular basis. So any of those maps can be produced in no time at all. So we do have that capability, Doug. So thanks for identifying that as a mechanism, just sharing that we're already on it.
So maybe 2027 we don't have to reach out that far. If it can be done so quickly and easily,
yeah.
Well, we'll look at revising the date on that recommendation.
Yeah, this one's, I mean, you just pick an elevation. This is, 5 meters above mean sea level, so properties that are susceptible to flooding. This has been around for a couple of years. Arnold did it a while ago.
Okay. If you could share maybe copies of that with the community,
sure.
Just as an example of what can be done.
Sure.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, and everybody can be informed on all the properties not to buy in town.
Right. Well, unless you're only thinking short term, right? Yeah. Okay, then there was the round table. I'm not sure. Does anybody know what that was in reference to under new business? No. Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that. I was going to mention whether we want to, I guess we can continue with the hybrid way of doing things here. So some of us are tuning in via Zoom and some are in the committee room. I will probably try to start doing more in person myself. I know council is considering it, I think, April 27th, we're going to be hopefully back in the chambers. I don't know if some people will be participating electronically, but I think given that things are opening up, there's really no reason why we can't meet in public if people want to. So the next meeting, I personally will plan to try to be there. But it is a personal decision, and everyone is welcome to make that decision for themselves. Does that sound fair? I don't. Okay. Future agenda items and discussions. So the next objective that we had identified is the effectively manage and support a healthy urban forest. So we've been working on that one for quite a while. Luce, do you have any updates for us on the status of the Urban Forest Master Plan?
Yes, I certainly do. I heard from the consultant, Jeremy Jai, that he's working on the draft and expects it soon. Unfortunately, that's the same response I had a few weeks ago. But I am in contact with him, and he is working on it.
Okay. Because I noticed there were a few questions staff had reached out about the workshop we had held. And so I was hopeful that maybe some of that had come back, but it's still in draft, is it?
That's correct. Still in draft. He's still refining it based on the outcome from that workshop.
Okay. So I'm not sure, Luke, if you have any comment about, I know when we met, we did highlight number four as something we wanted to talk about, but I'm not sure at what angle, because this committee has done so much work on the Urban Forest Master Plan.
Sure. Yeah, I remember that we were going to kind of skip over number four because it is being covered off by the Urban Forest Management Plan.
Yep.
And then on the topic of number five, I agree with Bob that Julie Pisani would be fabulous to come in and talk about watershed planning overall, but it sounds like that's not the case. So we may have to kind of regroup in terms of the focus on the next one. Bob, how would you, in the absence of RDN and Julie Pisani, how would you think to have this discussion about watershed management?
Thanks for the blindside, Luke. I'm not exactly sure. I mean, certainly, I think going back and looking at some of the work of that committee would be a good place to start. I just try and think if there's suitable summaries or overviews that they've given that I can think of. I'll think about that. If you can leave that one with me, I'll look back through old presentations, meetings, and minutes, and just see if there's something that might be topical to bring back to that.
So maybe prior to the next meeting, we could send some resources on the topic of watershed management, and then we can discuss it at the next meeting.
I think that would be great. And I think, Julie works with other people, and I've heard presentations. I think Mabry is involved to some extent, and I'm sure there's other people at the RDN that would be knowledgeable in at least some of the areas. So if people are agreeable, then the next meeting we would have is April the 18th, and that would be with regard to the watershed. I think most people are available that day, I hope. But Bernadette will send something out and confirm with everybody our availability, and also any resources that we need to share or can think of ahead of time, then we could do that. Luke?
Yeah, I just noted, I think that the 18th of April is Easter Monday. So we will have to push that off maybe to the next Monday.
Okay. The 25th?
Yeah, that's correct. So Bernie will circulate it, and if everyone's available, great. If not, we will find another date.
Works for me if I'm responsible.
For the 19th would work too, right? The next day.
I think as a group, everyone felt Mondays were the best, so I think I'd rather stick with a Monday and push it to the following week. But let's try to just go to the next one and see if it works for everyone.
Okay. Great. Does anybody have any comments about anything before we adjourn for today? Any?
I'd like to just drop a teaser to Lena that a motion to adjourn is the best way for you to take part in the meeting in a very low pressure way. So your opportunity is coming soon.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. I'm sorry if I did most of the talking. That's certainly not my intention. So if I am, feel free to jump in, please, anytime. I really appreciate everybody's input and thoughts, and thank you for being here today. So With that, then, motion to adjourn. Lena, do I see your hand up? Perfect. Okay, Lena moves. We have a seconder. Great. Greg, seconded. So, thank you, and we'll see you then on April 25th.